So you'd like to advocate for narcolepsy, but aren't sure where to start? In this episode, we talk about the power of your story and break down narcolepsy advocacy into three categories: self-advocacy, raising your voice publicly, and legislative advocacy. I'm joined today by two incredible advocates, Anna Lara and Matt Horsnell. Anna Lara is a poet and stay-at-home mom who is passionate about writing. She's a person living with narcolepsy who advocates for sleep health and serves on the board of directors for Project Sleep. Matt Horsnell is a father of three and science nerd living with type 1 narcolepsy with cataplexy. Matt is a Rising Voices of Narcolepsy trained speaker and a facilitator for Wake Up Narcolepsy's online small groups. Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. The Narcolepsy Nerd Alert series invites listeners to dive deeper into specific topics relevant to living with narcolepsy. For more on this topic, please check out our corresponding toolkit, available for free on our website to download, print, and share. The link to the toolkit and other Narcolepsy Nerd Alert topics is in the show notes, or you can go to project-sleep.com. Hello, everybody. We're really excited to talk about becoming a narcolepsy advocate. I'm Julie Flygar, and I'm the president and CEO of Project Sleep, and I am joining you from Los Angeles, and we have some very special guests with us today. We have Anna. Hi, Anna. Where are you joining us from?
I'm from Arizona. I'm in Glendale.
Okay. Hi, Matt.
Hey, I'm calling from Nashville.
All right. Well, guys, we're so excited to have you here. Anna, let's start with you. You could share a little bit about your journey as a advocate.
Yeah, I kind of started sharing some pictures and things online, and I decided, you know what, it's time to really educate myself. And, you know, I did it as a means to try to educate my family a little bit about narcolepsy. But what I found was just the connections to the community. And, you know, I started writing some poetry and it just kind of, you know, took off from there. Little by little, I started to meet more of you in the community. And I started to feel kind of a sense of involvement and a sense of like, this is where I belong. And it just showed me to slowly kind of open up and really live my life, you know, saying, this is me. These are the symptoms. No more hiding them or pretending that, you know, everything's okay. And it just gave me kind of an empowerment through being educated, I guess I could say, and educating my family members and learning more about everybody else's story. I kind of started to get involved with Project Sleep and taking pictures and stuff for World Narcolepsy Day, which was really exciting. And I got my family involved and, you know, they were really happy to be involved. And, you know, it just little by little took off from there. And then I had a small publication, like a magazine, kind of reach out and say, hey, we've read your poetry and, you know, we're really excited about it. You know, would you like to be a feature? And I just kind of told them a little bit about my background. And then I talked about my narcolepsy. So they got back to me and they said, wow, we're really excited about your story. And it really touched us. And they just said, you know, would you want to write about your story? And so, of course, you know, any opportunity to share my story. So I wrote my story and they published it in the magazine. And, you know, everything just kind of happened organically. And, you know, I'm very proud of this community and Project Sleep and all the love and everything you guys have shown me.
Thank you, Anna. Her poetry is so beautiful. We just included a few here. And you're underrating yourself, my dear. I mean, you said like a small publication. It's this gorgeous, gorgeous magazine with such beautiful art. And I mean, the design of it is just incredible. So being featured here is pretty awesome. And we're just so super proud of you. So let's just go ahead and have Matt introduce himself quickly as well.
Well, first, I just want to thank Project Sleep and Julie and Anna just for having me on here. It's an absolute honor to share this moment with you guys and to be a part of Nerd Alert. In many ways, I've punched my nerd card along the way. I started off with social media when it comes to advocacy, and it was reaching out. I was diagnosed in 07, and I was never bashful about doing a grassroots advocacy. So I was telling people that I would meet about it. I was trying to reduce stigma, really just kind of on a personal one-on-one level. And I realized that I was going through some transition in my life in right around 2015 and 2016. And I wanted to change a lot about how I was approaching my condition. I wanted to take more ownership of it. I wanted to treat this condition as more of an asset in my life and look for the positives and tease those out. Narcolepsy sucks a lot of times. You struggle with it. But there's a lot of ways that it's helped shape and define who I am as a dad and as a man. And that's been about a paradigm shift. So in 2016, I started to be a little more vocal on social media. I reached out to Julie on Twitter, made some connections there, really just started opening up some conversation. I started participating in some early hashtag in chat, which is a Twitter interactive social media effort that's independent, kind of hosted by Mike Heil as the founder. And that was where I really started to build my network of support. What I realized is that the support that I was receiving from this community was fueling me every single day. And so I really wanted to get more involved. So I talked with Julie on a number of messages back and forth. And, you know, I decided that I really wanted to step up what I was doing. She was able to get me in touch with some No Narcolepsy folks, which is an effort to raise awareness. And they do a lot of campaigns. You may check them out. But they had a great opportunity for me to share some of my kind of words of wisdom. I sound smarter on those memes than I actually am, just to let you guys know. But it's been a great opportunity. I did that in 2018. I also followed that up the next year, 2019, doing some legislative advocacy with Julie. We went to Washington. And at that point, I was hooked. I realized that there was power in my voice and in my message. It was a way for me to really feel like I was taking ownership and helping shape the future of narcolepsy research in a way I never really knew was possible. Later on in 2019, I was able to do the Rising Voices of Narcolepsy program. With that, just really gave me the speaking opportunities, the abilities to communicate what living with narcolepsy was like. Using storytelling is my main method. I've been able to speak to Belmont's College of Pharmacy, sharing my story. I've also spoken with a pharmaceutical group. And that was all, of course, before COVID. But that kind of changed how I'm doing things now. But for me, it's the fundamentals. It's the grassroots. It's the telling people one-on-one. I also am the owner of the longest hashtag in narcolepsy. It's hashtag world's strongest person having narcolepsy with catapults. And what that means for me, yes, there are times when I feel like I am the strongest person, but it's more about the mindset of what it takes to get up, to work out every single day, even when I don't want to fight through those moments. I'm also the facilitator for Wake Up Narcolepsy small groups, where I'm able to help share my experiences with newly diagnosed folks who have been diagnosed for a while. And what I've learned just throughout all of this is that by opening up, by shedding a few tears and being vulnerable, that is my ultimate strength. And that vulnerability as a strength is something that I'm really trying to get the word out for both the ladies and the guys to share their voice. And so that's the next step.
Awesome. Thank you, Matt. I really love what you said about vulnerability. It reminds me of Brené Brown. And maybe we'll have to add her to the resource list. You know, being nerdy, we need to have our resources reflect all these great things. So thank you for all of your intros. You guys probably are aware. I just like to put this in a timeline so that you understand that, like, getting possibly where you see I am today. It was a very long journey. So I was diagnosed the same year Matt was, in 2007. I think the first time I did a speaking engagement was with my own doctor at Harvard Med School for a class. It was more him asking me questions and me giving responses than me presenting a formal presentation. I wouldn't have known how to do that at that time for sure. 2009 is when I started my blog, because blogs were a thing back in 2009. You guys, 2009, Instagram did not even exist. So just saying, blogs were cool. I was cool, I promise. And so that was really when I first started reaching out, the same way Anna said how she was trying to really probably communicate with her own friends and family. That's the intention of my blog. And then I was so surprised by all the other people with narcolepsy around the world that found that, and that sense of community there that I wasn't even really looking for, becoming such a big part of my own journey. So the first time I helped as a volunteer, I helped Narcolepsy Network coordinate a advocacy day for narcolepsy back in 2010 on Capitol Hill, because their annual conference was taking place in Washington, D.C. that year. So I really didn't know what I was doing. I worked with some other volunteers and we kind of put together an advocacy day, but it was kind of a one-off in a way because we were volunteers and just trying to put something together. In 2012 was when I published my book, Wide Awake and Dreaming. And the very next year I founded Project Sleep. And I also, that same year, I guess, it seems like a lot to do, but I started Narcolepsy Not Alone as a campaign to raise awareness and to reduce isolation for people. And that really took off and opened a lot of doors to meeting a lot of people around the world and across the country. And in 2017 is when Project Sleep started the Rising Voices of Narcolepsy program. And that same year is when we started collaborating with the Sleep Research Society on sleep advocacy. So that was a really big year for us to start that program. And then just in 2019 is when we launched the World Narcolepsy Day as a coalition of organizations around the world. So to see some of the impact of some of those later efforts is still so surreal, because I remember that feeling back and I tried to find a message. I couldn't find it last night when I first said to my dad, I think someday I want to do something, you know, I didn't know how, but I want to do something to make a difference. This is so frustrating and so angering. And so how can I be part of the change, you know, that I want to see? Couldn't find the message, but I know it does exist. And so the whole thing is a journey. So where to start, right? If you have that feeling, possibly it seemed that on social media, some people responded to our post about this saying that they're not really sure where to start. They want to be an advocate. So we have a really first broad message for you. How many of you have ever had to talk about narcolepsy to a friend, a family member, a doctor? Has anyone ever had to deal with an insurance issue, trying to get a medication through some red tape? Okay. If anyone, if you raise your hand, you are a narcolepsy advocate. You are one. There's no certification. There's no rules around what that means. And we just want you to feel empowered that your experience matters. And because of that, and your story matters, and having to deal with this every day makes you an expert and makes you an advocate. So there's really no one right path, but we're going to go over some of the things that we thought of today. And it's such a broad topic that we could probably have days and days of conversations about all these. So we are going to try to get some good thoughts out there to start this conversation. Really quickly, why advocate? I think these are absolutely essential to remember. What is the change we're hoping to see? And for Project Sleep, and especially in the narcolepsy space, as we think about our efforts, what guides us is really the problems that we're trying to solve. And so these are some of those main problems, and you're probably super familiar with these already, but just to go over them quickly, is that public understanding and awareness of narcolepsy is limited and often inaccurate. That is one of the main reasons that there are 8 to 15 year average delays between the time that someone's symptoms start and diagnosis. People with narcolepsy often face stigma and report feeling isolated, and that research is limited and urgently needed to better understand and treat narcolepsy. So those are some of the main problems that we're trying to address through our efforts. And as you look at this list, some of these might be more important to you and your experience, closer to your heart, than others. So if you were trying to address possibly something like the fact that people feel isolated one of the, a great solution could be getting involved in support groups. Like Matt was talking about Wake Up Narcolepsy's support groups. That's a way to make sure that people don't feel as isolated, right? To have the social connection. If you're thinking about how to raise public awareness, you might take a different approach. If that's most important to you, that we change perceptions, that we get doctors' understanding, you might think about more like, how do you present or share your story with medical experts, stuff like that. So if research is important to you, funding research, we have some ideas on how to help be part of that solution as well today. We thought of kind of like, there's a lot of different areas of advocacy, and we definitely want to acknowledge all of them today, even though we can't go into tons of detail on all of them. Here are some of the different areas that we thought of them. We want to probably start with self-advocacy. I don't know if that's actually the exact right term. It's just the best I could come up with. It's somewhat advocating in your own life or in your loved one's life, if you are a parent or a loved one of a person with narcolepsy. Advocacy that is dealing with your doctor, your insurance company, the pharmacy, advocating for yourself for possibly for reasonable accommodations at school or at a job, or going through the Social Security disability process. Or as I've learned most recently, there's even a lot of advocating for yourself in getting a service animal. And there's also advocating with your friends and your family. So there's a lot there. Like I said, we could have a whole probably conference just about that one bubble of advocacy. We're going to go over some tips in that area today, but we're not going to focus a huge part on that today. Then we have raising your voice publicly. So that is kind of moving away from your inner circle of your experience to putting yourself forward as a public voice. And that could be through speaking engagements on social media, blogs, poetry, as Anna pointed out, speaking to media outlets, getting stories in magazines. So that's an area that we're going to talk about today. And the third area we're going to talk about today is legislative advocacy, which is another way. And I like it because it's, I guess, seemingly sometimes it feels like it's going to the source of the problem sometimes, that like it's working on a systems level approach to making some change. But all of these are super important and they all are hugely impactful and important. You can't address any problem just in one way. So these are just some different approaches. In the self-advocacy area, we've just put together some of these kind of like key statements. When I had thought about my own personal experience, and hopefully Matt and Anna, you can add some other additional ones. But when I thought about my experience of working with medical management and red tape of getting things approved and that whole process, some of the statements that came to mind for me was realizing this idea of, is there someone else I can speak to? That if not getting through to someone, that is, you know, important for any sort of customer service situation, I guess. But that's been helpful for me to ask that sometimes. And then how should I proceed to resolve this issue? Because I sometimes think, has anyone ever felt like other people in the system are dropping responsibility easily? Say, oh, well, that's someone else's job, you know? And so I think this helps people think again from your perspective of like, how then, what's the next step? What's the next step for me to resolve this? And then, I didn't really think what you have to do, you know? So that can be helpful. I know, Matt, you had this idea about making a list. Did you want to talk
about that? Yeah. So can I ask a favor? So it's a great intro. When you're trying to break the ice, you might feel a little bit apprehensive about how do I bridge this gap. I love it when friends do read or ask. This is where I love to offer them resources, whether it be Rising Voices and Narcolepsy presentations, Julie's book. It's a great way to hear from somebody else, because sometimes just hearing it from a third party, hearing about it from somebody on the internet, it can really help them comprehend, and they hear it in different words than what you've been saying over and over again, and that's just really critical. Thank you for thinking about me, but I can't at this time. That comes to the no word. You know, learning how to say no is invaluable. You know, it's something that I've struggled with over time, but I have to realize, you know, that my condition does have put some limitations, and I need to make sure that I'm prioritizing and I'm balancing my schedule to make sure that I'm getting my priorities taken care of. What do you know about narcolepsy? That's a great way to, you know, when we think about advocacy, it's a conversation. It's a two-way process. You're communicating with, you know, your family member, your doctor. It's not just you telling somebody. It's you seeing where they are and us understanding what their, you know, comprehension of narcolepsy is.
Do we have good examples of that? It's from legislative advocacy, but let's do it now.
Yeah, I just finished telling my story to a state representative's health legislative rep, and he was kind of had this stoic presence, and it was tough getting to read on what he was thinking, what he was feeling. And so I told him what narcolepsy means to me. And then, you know, Julie, I think, was picking up on some of those mute responses. And then she said, well, what do you know about narcolepsy? You know, what are your experiences with the condition? And, you know, can you tell us about your experiences? And his response was, and I don't want to say who it was in his family, but I have a close family member with narcolepsy. And all of a sudden, there was this connection that wouldn't have existed had the question not been asked. I don't think he was going to come forward with that information unless he was asked. And from that point on, that changed the trajectory of how we were approaching that particular legislative meeting. And you've got 15 minutes or less to spend with these key figures. And so you want to make sure that you're optimizing that and making sure that there's connection established. And it was great for me to sit there and watch that interaction unfold, both from how I had started off and then to see how things started to change after Julie asked that question. And it was just a profound moment. You know, it's like, okay, I need to make sure too that I'm not just telling about my experience, but I'm engaging in a conversation approach. And so that it's something I'll never forget. And it's definitely been incorporated into every legislative conversation that I've had after that. And also in ones that my grassroots efforts, talking with people, what do you know about narcolepsy? And it gives me a chance to reduce stigma too, if they don't know anything about the condition.
Yeah. I think what I said was something like, are you familiar with it? You know, and he nodded. I was like, oh, like from, I was kind of being a little bit, I don't want to say snarky, but kind of like, I was like, oh, from TV, expecting that he would be like, oh yeah, I've seen Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo or something, you know, but he just nodded saying he was familiar with it. So I said, oh, like from TV or your personal life. And then he revealed he had a family member. And so, yeah, it was just a really reminder of like that we're not always talking at people, but it can be a conversation. And that was really good reminder of that. So then, oh yeah, how about the last one?
Yeah. So what questions do you have about narcolepsy and how it impacts me? So again, you're giving them an opportunity to ask questions, thoughts that have come up in their mind. For me, again, too often when I was learning how to talk about it, it was focusing on me talking from my perspective, but this just gives me a chance to put an olive branch out there, let them meet me, and we can begin to build on their knowledge and what they need to know.
Cool. Thank you, Matt. Anna, are there any of these that you feel like you've used in particular, or different questions or communication techniques?
Yeah, I think for myself, self-advocacy is just, it's become more of like self-care. Advocating for myself has become like something that I need, you know? So for example, if I'm going to hang out with friends and they know that I can't drive very far, then I say, oh, you know, can you meet me halfway? Can I bring someone so that they can drive me? Because as a mom, you know, you don't get a lot of moments to take care of yourself. And for me, self-advocacy has become my own personal self-care. And, you know, like they said, to be a little bit assertive, like these are my needs. So that's the only thing I wanted to add.
I feel like that is such a powerful point. And because often many of us already have established patterns with people, you know, you have established patterns of how things go with certain friends and family. And I've noticed myself, especially if I don't like some family that I'm not close to in the physicals, right? So then we spend vacations or holidays together. And then I'm noticing that my needs aren't really being met, because it was never like, when is the time to then readdress and say, oh, so now things are going to be a little different. And I remember with my family having my niece, Zoe, who's my most adorable niece in the whole world. I love her so much. But when it was her nap time, you know, it was Zoe's nap time. And I'd be like, you know, because she's a kid. and so understandable. And then trying to be like, oh, it's Zoe's nap time. Perfect. You know, that really works out well for me. And then I think when, at what point to then say, well, it's also like Julie needs a nap time, not because I'm a kid, but because of my narcolepsy. It's a really hard thing that I struggle with. So I think it's such an important point about finding that assertiveness and changing those patterns with people. Raising your voice publicly. There's a lot here. I was curious from both Anna and Matt, do you remember a certain day that you decided that you were going to become public about your narcolepsy and disclose that publicly, or at what point in your life generally? I'd love to hear your experience.
I'll go first. I think for me, it was just, I kind of started trickling it in to my social media, and I liked the response that I got from some family members. You know, they were like, oh, I didn't know that this is how it was for you. And I think slowly, I just feel like the things for me to share kind of just chose me. So with the poetry, I feel like I just put it out there and I thought, oh, we'll see. These are my feelings. Here's some feelings. Let's see what happens. But the response that I got from the community and from people just saying, wow, you know, I feel this. This is how I feel. You described exactly my emotions. And that was really powerful for me. And so I thought, you know, maybe I can keep doing this. You know, maybe if I express myself, I can then make others feel like you're not alone. There are so many other people that feel just like this or feel just like you. But I would always try to incorporate different infographics from like Project Sleep because I wanted to, you know, back up my my feelings or my symptoms with facts so that people could go through and read them and say, oh, okay, that's what this is about, or that's what this means, sort of like that.
For me, it was around one of the early sleep weeks after I started to make the conscious decision to become more vocal. So I think it was 2017. I started to notice that sleep week coming up, there's different fundraising activities. This is a chance for me to share some infographics like Anna was talking about. Sleep In for Project Sleep was a huge jump into the deep end. Let's make a whole lot of noise. Let's raise some money. Let's make a difference. And if you didn't know I had narcolepsy before that, you definitely did after, because I had talked about it straight for a week. And so that was probably one of the key changing points. I started to realize that while I was, you know, talking about my condition with people one-on-one, I was really living an isolated existence with it because I didn't have that peer support that's been essential. And so using those sleep weeks and seeing who's posting, who's using the hashtags, those are great ways for me to increase my support network. The World Narcolepsy Day was great because I got to see so many people that hadn't shared before taking that opportunity to post about their life with narcolepsy. And that was a huge moment for so many people. And, you know, Sleep Week, National Narcolepsy Awareness Day, those are great opportunities to come out, feel the support, feel the love, and just start talking about it. You don't have to do it every day, but it's a great way to put it out there and just use your strengths and your skills to advocate for yourself.
Yeah, I think I remember, for me, I made a very conscious decision because my dad had been an employment lawyer. And so he had really talked about being careful about when I disclosed publicly because of job stuff. And so that was kind of always in one ear, right? And then I had this voice in me that I felt like I was like suppressing and like swallowing it back. Like, don't say anything about this. And then I just was like, wait, if I do talk, I could write a book, I could do some media work. And once I switched, it was like, no going back really. And it did feel like when I changed my thinking to think, how can I be part of the solution to reduce the stigma so that people don't have to feel afraid to disclose in the future? It just was a big moment. You guys both started on social media. Like I said already, I started with a blog because that was the thing back in 2009. I mean, they still are a thing, and I still recommend it as a great platform for yourself. It really is. It's still, you know, kind of like a personal website. It's a really great platform for some people that are looking to take that next step. And you guys have both talked about leveraging your interests and skills. And I think that's super important because we all are people that have so much more to us than just narcolepsy. And I find from a storytelling perspective and a communications perspective, sometimes empathy comes in realizing that you share other things with people. So if someone loves poetry, but they don't have narcolepsy, you know, they can engage with Anna on that track. Matt is in the gym or doing his workouts and he can talk to people on that track. And so, and I guess for myself, I did call myself REM runner. And I have subsequently realized I don't love running, but I have run a few marathons and everything. So that's kind of, I brought my running together with my narcolepsy. So if you can bring some of those other areas of your life to your advocacy, I think that's a really, really powerful lens to be creating a platform on. And I think, as we all kind of have said already, it's finding community, organizations, training, and awareness days. It was kind of the unexpected thing, right? You go to like tell your own story and then you find that community. And I think that's part of a really big step for a lot of people is learning about the organizations, seeing what they're doing, seeing how you can get more involved, what kind of trainings are out there or programming, and those kind of awareness days that Matt mentioned. You never know who you might reach. So I'll just share a quick anecdote about that, which is that one of the earliest things I ever did was reach out to my high school to raise awareness and see if I could get into the alumni magazine. Well, actually, they said, how about the online portal? How about not the fancy magazine? How about the online portal thing? I was like, okay, sure. You know, so they wrote a really small paragraph and it went on this online portal, never made it into the magazine. But I didn't realize that one of my old classmates was working at Marie Claire as an editor. And she actually reached out to me and then asked if I might like to share my story with her for Marie Claire magazine. So that's an example where I probably maybe had tried to pitch myself to Marie Claire magazine on my own, but didn't really know what I was necessarily possibly doing. And so taking those small opportunities, like that high school online portal, even though it wasn't my dream awareness opportunity, it reached something. And it actually took about a year, I think even longer, for that article to even come out. So it's a very long process. But I just think that also when I blogged, I had people that never commented, never said anything. And then in person later, years later, they said, oh, I love that blog post you wrote. And I never knew that they even read my blog. So I feel like you guys also had some other stories along those lines of, you know, not really knowing who you might be reaching.
Yeah, just with sharing my story, I decided to use some of my artwork. I know I sent some to Julie. I glue some of the rocks and fossils together and create these kind of sometimes odd, sometimes dark, but just representations of where my mind is at night as I'm fading off. And I was able to send one to Neil deGrasse Tyson, astrophysicist. And I was able to use my narcolepsy story as kind of the way to get in touch with the social media guy and tell him a little bit about narcolepsy. It ended up making its way all the way to Dr. Tyson's desk. And I got a picture of it for Christmas sitting on his desk. And that was one of the coolest things ever. But I was able to share it with somebody. I'm sure Dr. Tyson knows a little bit about everything, so he probably knew some about narcolepsy, but that was a great opportunity. And also through a Project Sleep event, I was able to meet Isaiah Thomas, which was really cool. And I got a chance to talk with him. So you don't really know where it's going to take you, who you're going to run into that has somebody living with narcolepsy.
For me with poetry, I've actually had a few messages from other people, you know, just kind of around the world saying like, oh, wow, I didn't know that people made poetry about narcolepsy. And to me, I was like, oh, wow, well, there's, you know, I know a lot of other poets who write about narcolepsy, you know. It was really eye-opening to see these people connecting through my poetry. And I even had one person from, I think, France. And she said, oh, I don't know any other people with narcolepsy, you know, in my country. And I said, well, I know someone, you know, so I kind of connected those two people. And it, for me, it's like, oh, wow, you know, I feel like I'm doing something. But it's really neat to see those connections and building those relationships with the community and people.
And I think you guys have touched on this as well, which is also, I think, Matt, you just said it kind of beautifully earlier, and I just want to highlight again about you said you don't have to do this every day, but consistency is really powerful, I think, over time, and also relationship building and trust. I do see a lot of people come in with a lot of interest and they seem really gung-ho, but it fades. And I think that consistency over time, sort of like it's the tortoise versus the hare, or, you know, the slow but steady, right? And we don't have to make a job of this every day by any means, but over time that can really build up and lead to stuff that you never imagined, as opposed to just really, really strong, you know, posting 10 times a day, but only doing that for a little bit of time and then thinking it's too overwhelming. So, and that relationship building is just part of what we talked about before, with just remembering that really a lot of this is person by person. That's how I've built my network of friends or community, is really a lot of just person by person. So I guess we've talked a while here. I think we have a cool little quote: social change can only move at the speed of trust. I've seen a few different quotes like this and they hit me so hard, because I just think that often it's forgotten how much social change advocacy is really about relationships and trust and showing up for each other and knowing each other as humans. So just a quick reminder about that. If it's not right for you to disclose, I completely understand that. And we did talk about some ideas. Matt, you had a great example about, you know, there are other ways to be sharing.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. There's a couple people that I know that they're concerned about possible impacts with an employer, and so they use an alternate social media account to do their awareness for narcolepsy. So they're not having to put their name and their face attached to particular messages, and they do a great job of using infographics and storytelling about their experiences without having to quote unquote go public. And I think you hit on a great point. It's about finding the right balance for you and at the right time. And so, you know, if you can't do it now, just put a little file in your brain that it's, you know, something that you want to revisit later, because it has to be the right time or you do lose interest. And people run into the problems with employers all the time. And that's a reason to both keep it close to your vest, but also to raise more awareness. And that just underscores the importance of what we're doing to reduce stigma and change people's perspective about what could be accomplished living with this condition. So there's ways you can work around that, not having your face out there, having, you know, some valuable messages getting across without using your name.
Yeah. And for Rising Voices, we ask if people would like to use just their first name or a pseudonym, and they can do that through their efforts. They probably would still have, if they're a speaker, people can see their face. But yeah, it's doing what's right for you. And stigma of narcolepsy is real, which leads to discrimination. And that is a real part of the journey for people. So, and also there can be other factors in people's life that are, you know, stigmatized aspects of someone's identity. Sexual orientation, race, ethnicity, all those things can be other sources of stigma. So when you bring a medical condition together with some of those things as well, that can be a lot. And so I think that it's important to just really recognize that it's okay. This isn't for everybody to be out there on social media showing their face and sharing their personal experience. There's a lot of considerations of safety, employment, stuff like that. We have a little bit more in this area. So I think there is a lot of people who really do love sharing facts. It's very easy to simply, you know, put up an infographic. And I definitely think that is really great in certain situations. But I just think this is kind of an interesting thing to understand as well. To beware of the information deficit model, which is a term that was coined in the 1980s, that at the time described a widely held belief. Much of the public skepticism about science was rooted in lack of knowledge. Sort of the thinking that, like, if only the public knew more, they would be more likely to embrace scientific information. So it's kind of this, people are missing information. So if only we give them the info, if only we tell them narcolepsy is a neurological condition affecting 1 in 2,000 people and lack of hypocretin in the brain, that all at once that's going to make people like, oh my God, I had no idea. Now I care. I'm, you know, much more understanding now. That might not always be the case, that facts don't always necessarily help people embrace information or increase empathy. So research has shown that that doesn't always change people's views. So this is why we try to emphasize story sharing and emphasize that, especially in our Rising Voices program, because it truly is an evidence-based approach, meaning there's research that shows that, you know, by sharing your story and stories, that you are able to foster empathy and be empowered, more empowered yourself, inspire people to take action and reduce stigma and create role models for other people. It's a really powerful approach. We're not getting to get into it too much more today, but the stories we tell become the world we live in. And I just think that's a really, really powerful thing to remember. We're just going to quickly, very quickly, go over a few health communications best practices as you are out there sharing your story. Project Sleep recommends using people first language and using a balanced firsthand perspective that respects autonomy of different people's experiences with narcolepsy. Every single person that I've met with narcolepsy has a different experience. And that's what's so wonderful about something like Rising Voices, where we're elevating different stories, because there's no one person that can represent the whole condition just by sharing their experience. And even how we share about narcolepsy, it's important to remember that we're sharing our experience and not representing everyone. And how do we balance that? Really quickly about people first language, you know, disease only language would be saying something like a narcoleptic or narcoleptics. Disease first language is putting the disease before the person. So that'd be a narcoleptic person or narcoleptic people. And people first language is putting the person before the condition. So a person with narcolepsy or people with narcolepsy. So what is behind this people first language? I just want to remind people that this is not a matter of political correctness. It is based on a scientifically established phenomenon in which condition first language subconsciously propagates stigma and dehumanization in the audience's mind. So this has been studied. It's actually been studied around the world, including different languages, and really shown that people's perceptions of groups will be different depending on whether you're saying something like disabled people versus people with disabilities, the mentally ill versus people with mental illness, or epileptics versus people with epilepsy. There's also been a lot done in diabetes, a diabetic versus a person with diabetes. And so this has been a cultural change over, I'd say probably, I don't know, the last 20 or so years, as this research has really come to light and show that how they kind of research this is that they'll give a group of people questions like, how comfortable would you be working with an epileptic? And then a whole different group of people get the same questions, but how comfortable would you be working with a person with epilepsy? And so they can actually show by doing big groups and, you know, all the data analysis stuff that goes into it, that people would feel more comfortable and be able to feel less social distance from people if you use person first language. A balanced firsthand perspective is really important. And so this is referring, when you're referring to a broader group, so when you're saying something like, well, you know, people with narcolepsy, it's important to use neutral language that respects diversity and personal autonomy. So you might not want to say something that's kind of non-neutral. So a non-neutral term might be that everyone with narcolepsy is suffering. You can personally say, I feel that I am suffering, but suffering is a very personal to your experience term and shouldn't be assumed that that you know how other people are feeling in those kinds of terms. So we say that that's why we use words like narcolepsy is a serious neurological condition, as opposed to saying something like disabling. For some people, it will be true and they can define it for themselves that way when they're talking about their experience. But when we're talking about broader group, we just stay a little bit more neutral. Avoiding stereotypes and generalizations like everyone or no one or always or never. Those are red flags to me. I always think if anyone tells you anything is absolute, they're probably not true. So really emphasize trying to be a little bit more careful as far as saying often, sometimes, those kind of terms. Speak from your experience. So I think a lot of people expect us to be able to represent the whole group of people with narcolepsy. So you might find that someone asks you a question like, do you drive? Well, do they want to know if I, Julie Flygard, drive? Or do they want to know if people with narcolepsy drive? So the way you can probably handle that is like, for me, I am able to drive. I track very carefully the timing of when I do that to make sure that I'm well medicated and well awake. For people with narcolepsy, that varies. Some people drive, some people choose not to. So that's how you can answer to both your experience, but also remind people always that there's a variety of experiences out there. So those are some key phrases around speaking from your experience. And just as we transition to legislative advocacy, just want to share this quote from Ebony, who's one of our Rising Voices speaker. And she spoke at a congressional briefing back in 2019 when we were in person and doing things like that. And she said, "I'm sharing my story because representation matters." And I think that for her, that was a really powerful point of realizing that if she didn't see other people that looked like her to be someone that could have narcolepsy, that she might not know that she could, you know, have something like that. So thinking about the next generation and how important it is to represent different experiences. Legislative advocacy. This is just one other additional way to make progress. And I think it's especially powerful when conducted consistently over time and with expert guidance. So that's not me. That's actually, we work with experts in Washington, D.C., the Health and Medicine Council, and they are in this stuff every day. And they represent a lot of different patient advocacy organizations, professional societies, and universities. And so they really know how all this stuff works way better than I do. But I think that's important to understand. It's consistent over time, and it's with expert guidance, bringing those things together. For Project Sleep, we focus our advocacy on sleep health and sleep disorders, which we're really, really proud of. And these are some of our guiding principles or the areas where we're trying to make sure our advocacy is working on: advancing sleep research, accelerating treatment options, ensuring access to healthcare, hugely important, furthering education, awareness, and training, and addressing social justice and sleep health disparities. That has been a new area that we have added to our legislative agenda and really working hard on this past year, and we're really excited about it. So as we think about advocacy, when to advocate, when to get involved, there are some really key opportunities, and we do stuff throughout the year. You know, Congress is responsible for creating the budget for the federal government in the U.S. So that includes creating the budgets for institutions and agencies that are relevant to priorities that I just talked about. That includes the NIH, the CDC, which does a lot of awareness work, the Department of Defense, which actually does fund some sleep research, the FDA, all of that. When they are working on that budget process, so when they're deciding how much money to give NIH, basically, to fund for medical research, that is an opportunity when they also can make some suggestions to NIH about things that are important, what they're hearing from their constituents. So that's why this appropriations process or this budget process is a key opportunity to have our priorities heard and be part of that process. So in late February, early March, when they're starting that process for next year, so they're just working, they're like, you know, like any sort of a company or anything, like they're planning their budget for next year, and they're just at the beginning stages. And so that's the important time to get our voice in there and say what we hope for NIH research and for the CDC to be funding and DOD and stuff like that. Okay. So if you're bearing with me, the way that we advance that, the way that we say, here are our priorities, please keep these in consideration when you're creating this budget and this big packet of advice sort of that goes along, comments that go along with that when they hand it over to the institutes and agencies, is through this congressional sign-on letter. And it outlines these different priorities that we have. And in mid-February of 2019, we first asked you guys to say, okay, we have this letter. It's for your representative to sign on to, hopefully. And so we had probably over 100 or 200 patient advocates, along with sleep researchers and different people in the sleep community, reaching out to their representatives at the House, U.S. House of Representatives, and asking them to sign on to this letter. So we got 31 in 2019, and we were really pleased with that. Our goal was 20. And our health experts in D.C. said that this was actually really a good, strong response. You know, I guess it's hard to know sometimes if you don't know, like, well, what's normal, right? I didn't know. I thought 20 seemed good. They said that 31 representatives signed on to a letter is something that you might see more from an organization that brings in like 700 advocates to Capitol Hill. You know, they're thinking like major organizations, not like a small, really small nonprofit. So the passion of this community is incredible, that we got so many people reaching out to the representative's office, which led to 31 of them signing onto the letter. It was bipartisan, so it had people from both Republicans and Democrats signed onto that letter. And then in 2020, we were hoping to just at least get over 31, and we actually got 41 representatives signed on. So we can't always get every representative signed on, and that's part of the process in a way, is just asking them though. They won't be aware of this opportunity unless you bring it to them as their constituent. So what does the letter really mean? Does it really do anything? I mean, it sounds great to have like 41 or 31, but I just wanted to really show your impact is real. Just like your narcolepsy is real. Your impact through this is real. And sometimes it's not always easy to explain, but we've had some major tangible success points of moving things forward. Because like everything else, like progress is slow and steady. But we've had a huge win this past year. We have been advocating for the last few years through that letter for the CDC to establish a chronic disease education and awareness program to award grant opportunities to organizations to do awareness work. For example, a project could be to raise awareness about narcolepsy or sleep disorders with physicians or with the public. This opportunity didn't really exist. So creating this new opportunity was important. It was important for the sleep community and for other conditions as well. So through our work and through some other organizations' work as well, we actually got this program established. It was established at $1.5 million program, which isn't very big if you kind of look at the budget for something like the CDC, but it is a starting point. So we're really, really proud of the work that congressional sign-on letter led to the actual establishment of a new program that can help raise awareness about chronic diseases like narcolepsy, but also other ones that are hugely misunderstood and people are not aware of. Also, narcolepsy researchers have credited our advocacy for helping them to secure NIH grants. I know that two narcolepsy researchers have said really specifically that they feel that our work, and in our letter every year, we make sure that NIH knows that we really want to see sleep disorders research, that sleep research has been going up at NIH, but sleep disorders research was kind of lagging, and reminding them that the community wants to make sure that they are making advancements, not only in understanding sleep in general, which is important, but also for people living with sleep disorders. I believe that Project Sleep is the only organization in our space that has been watching the federal funding of narcolepsy research this carefully. This is a lot of work to even be able to tell you how much funding is specifically going into narcolepsy research. So in 2008, that was $4.1 million was spent on funding narcolepsy research. So that is research that different institutes are doing. That's Harvard, that's Stanford. That's money going out to some of the leading institutions funding their research. And then in 2009, it was $4.5 million. And at the time, this is when I first looked into this, this seemed about steady. This seemed about regular, you know, that every year it was about $4 to $5 million, that they were in that range. Well, I didn't look at it again. It's because, like I said, it's kind of a big project to kind of figure out this information. The next one we looked at, it was when we were establishing our sleep advocacy program, which I mentioned back was in 2017, when we started working with the Sleep Research Society and getting involved much more formally in sleep advocacy again. That year, it was down to $2.5 million. So that's a huge drop. And when you have so little research being funded, that's not good to see narcolepsy research going down like that. And that seemed at the time to be kind of like what was happening. So that's when we really started the letter efforts. We actually did a letter in 2017 that was specifically asking NIH what they were doing about narcolepsy research. And so after that, we're happy to say that in 2018, there was $5 million dedicated to narcolepsy and idiopathic hypersomnia research. And in 2019, we were at $6 million. So the trend is looking up, and it looks like our advocacy is really making an impact in that area. It's necessarily not something that we talk about a lot, but I'm really glad that we have some of this information together now and we can be talking about it and tracking it. This is really because of you guys. It's every person that reached out to their representative, which can be done by email. But we also, part of our efforts has been bringing some small groups to Capitol Hill. A lot of the work that we do in person is setting the groundwork for the online campaign for the letter. So it's getting all of that set up. And then we do this big online campaign, which involves everybody from anywhere. Matt, I know that you've been part of our advocacy and in many ways. Is there anything from the congressional sign-on letter experience that you remember specifically about how that goes that you might want to share with people if they're new?
Yeah, it's a relatively simple process. I mean, Project Sleep gives you everything you need from the letter to a template. You add in a couple sentences of your story, letting them know that, you know, you're a constituent from their district. The Health Medicine Wellness Council of Washington will actually get you your legislative's contact information, so you don't have to go and find who the health legislative assistant is from your representative, which is really, you know, it just makes that process all the easier. It's not just people with narcolepsy who can do this. If you have family members who live in an adjacent district or live in a different state, they can, you know, use this opportunity to say, dear representative, I'm speaking to you on behalf of my family member or my friend who lives with narcolepsy. This is something important to my heart. And I know that that's one way to kind of expand, you know, the number of sign-ons. I just want to think about how important and how huge it was that during the COVID crisis, we increased the participation from 31 to 41, because that hit right when we were trying to get these letters going. And that just underscores the importance and value of each person's efforts. And, you know, even if your legislator didn't sign on this year, they might sign on next year. The work that you're doing, it's planting for future harvest. It's not just an immediate turnaround. And so don't get discouraged. Now, the good thing is that sleep is a bipartisan issue. We all sleep. We're not asking for an exorbitant increase in funding. This is consistent with what's already out there. And we're just asking that sleep and sleep research get their piece of the pie. And a quick story, tell who you are, why this is important to you, and then just use that template and send it off. You can follow up. Yeah, I found it helpful to follow up with an email if you haven't heard back in, you know, a week, 10 days. And then also, if you still haven't heard back, you can make some phone calls and ask to speak to that person. Just leave some messages. Your voice matters. You already have all the tools. It's just a matter of putting out an email, maybe two. And then if you are like me, just make phone calls and make sure they know who you are. In a polite way.
Yeah, I think that follow-up is really important. I've heard that, you know, if you just send one email and they think you'll just go away, oh, well, you know, I mean, some offices will write you back and say, great, yep, I checked with the representative and we're happy to sign on. If that happens, wonderful. But I've heard that others, you know, maybe they'll just see if you go away. And when you follow up in, 3 to 5 days or a week and you check in, you let them know that you're not just going to let it drop and that you are, you know, looking for results. And that is a really powerful point I've heard. So thank you, Matt, for being consistent, even calling. I don't like making phone calls myself. I much prefer email. So anyone that's willing to make a phone call, extra bonus points of amazingness and advocacy. So, but it all can be done via email for the most part. And it is so important that everyone does that. And it's just one opportunity throughout the year. And so there are other things we'll do throughout the year, especially making sure that we're advocating for healthcare coverage for people. A lot of issues can be divisive, but sleep affects everyone. And Dane, our representative at Health and Medicine Council, has said our only opposition is lack of awareness. And so even if your representative doesn't sign on, just imagine you've just informed a few new people that narcolepsy exists. Here are some of the patient organizations. We had this last time, but I think I just want to reiterate it because each one of these groups is doing a lot in different areas of advocacy. The Hypersomnia Foundation put out a really great broadcast about Social Security disability. And so I think that's one of their, of many, they have many great things, resources, but I found that, recently I was very excited to see that they were taking some leadership in that area specifically. So if you have questions about Social Security disability advocacy, I would check out the Hypersomnia Foundation. Narcolepsy Network has some of the best resources I've seen about educational accommodation awareness and how to get accommodations when you're in school. Project Sleep, what do we have? Our Rising Voices and our advocacy program. Wake Up Narcolepsy has the really fantastic support groups that Matt talked about, you know, as far as making sure that people don't feel alone. And also just really want to highlight Wake Up Narcolepsy's work in privately funding narcolepsy research. So they are raising a lot of money to privately fund narcolepsy research, which is another avenue that's important. So they are helping to fund some of the same researchers that we're also hoping can get really big NIH grants. And so their work in that area is exemplary as well. There are tons of international organizations. So please check out our World Narcolepsy Day webpage for that whole listing. And a lot of them are doing really interesting, different advocacy. The group in Brazil has really been working to establish narcolepsy as something in their country that they can get accommodations for. So we're really proud of all the different people doing advocacy around the world. For Raising Your Voice, some of the resources I just want to mention, Rebecca Fuoco wrote this beautiful two-page, very, very short article that is available for free called People-Centered Language Recommendations for the Sleep Research Community. So at the same time that Project Sleep is hoping to bring some of these best practices around language choice to patient advocates, we're also hoping to bring that to the research community as well so that they can learn some of those best practices. So she published this short two-page paper that's just super eloquent in explaining some of these things. And I highly recommend that for everybody. The Stanford Social Impact Review put out a beautiful podcast called Storytelling for Social Change. And I think that's just a really powerful, there's different panelists talking about different ways of using storytelling through the media, through virtual reality, VR, and through movies and working with filmmakers. So that's just a podcast I just love. Getting nerdy, guys. Please consider the Rising Voices of Narcolepsy training program for people with narcolepsy and idiopathic hypersomnia to be trained on some of these best practices and more. And two of the programs that we built Rising Voices from are called the Health Story Collaborative, and they have a beautiful website about storytelling and opportunities to get involved in what they're doing. And the Op-Ed Project is a project for women to make sure that women are authoring op-eds. Forget, there's some high percentage of op-eds that are written by men. So this project is really focused on helping women to learn how to write op-eds, to make sure that the voices of women are part of our national discourse. So those are some of the trainings that we base Rising Voices on. And then for legislative advocacy, please check our website, make sure you're getting our alerts through our e-updates. And we started the Sleep Advocacy Forum, and there are some beautiful videos. So if you want to learn more about what NIH is funding for different sleep disorders, and what FDA is doing in patient-centered drug development, or what's happening in sleep, race, and health disparities. These videos are a really great resource for you. And they're on our different social. They're on Facebook, they're on Instagram, and on YouTube. Okay, so thank you guys so much for being here. And we'll have a toolkit that we'll put out. And huge shout out to Taylor, who has been helping us to turn these broadcasts into a toolkit. It's a big project. So we're really grateful to be working with Taylor on that. Thank you to Matt and Anna for joining today. Any closing words, guys?
Just the power of your voice. That's where your strength lies. You already have a voice. You have your story. And these are some great ways to amplify it and do what's right for you. So thank you just for taking the time to learn about this. Congressional advocacy has meant so much to me, and social advocacy as well. But there's so much that we can do to make change.
Thank you, Matt.
I just want to say to, you know, remind everybody that advocacy is, you evolve with it. So, you know, you can start somewhere small, like just posting your story, which is a very personal choice, of course, just sharing a few things or advocating with yourself and your family, and it evolves from there.
I loved what you said earlier, Anna, about how advocacy kind of chose you, or it trickled in to your social media. I think that's so beautiful. So here's some more trickling in. And thank you guys for being so active and for taking this time today. With that, we'll go ahead and say goodbye.
The Project Sleep podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.